Operator, give me the number for 911.
21 gigawatts!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
nothing happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Tracks deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, children, what's that sound?
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway.
Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
It's old Shaziz. I'm out here in my mad science laboratory. Hope you're all doing well. Sorry about the long intro. On days when I got a long intro, usually I'm a juggling something. Either the doggone things are going crazy behind the scenes or whatever, and I'm trying to buy myself some time or whatever. I'm trying to get some folks together for the show, that kind of stuff, which I normally start off a little early, and sometimes I'm running behind or whatever, so... With that said, I hope you enjoyed the first part of the show there, the little intro. Anyway, I got a special request from a buddy over in Bulgaria. He's got a tune that he wanted me to play before the show, and somehow or another got distracted and forgot all about it. Sorry there, Mitko, but here's your tune, and everybody, this tune comes complimentary of Mitko out there, and the song is Last Train to Paradise by K. Drew.
Until our paradise is shown, so we can live forever young. Follow the echoes of your soul to the edge of our beyond. And no matter where you go, let's be sure to make it on the last train to paradise.
choice of music there, Mitko. I love that, you know. Essentially, this network is on the last train to paradise, you know. We've got something good going on out here, and we got to keep our eye on the ball and keep this thing a-rolling. You know, the Shazizz Radio Network's about peace and love and alternative energy, alternative medicines, alternative everything, you know, gardening. It's about alternatives to the system that is the beast that's eating us all alive. Now, you keep your eye on that ball, and we got it made. So, you know, as soon as some of these other mad science guys call me up, we'll get into this deal. But in the meantime, some of my research that, well, actually the bulk of my research built on Tesla technology and other ideas that I've researched in alternative energy are plasma. There's a lot that you can do with plasma if you understand how it all works and what's going on inside there and everything. You know, back in the late 1800s, they had what was called a mercury arc rectifier, which essentially was the very first plasma reactor ever designed. It was also the very first diode. And for those of you out there who ain't familiar what a diode is, in the energy world, AC current is kind of goes back and forth, you know. Hey, looky there, some mad science guys calling me up here. Anyway, a diode essentially only allows the current flow in one direction, which would give you direct current, DC current, that you always hear people talk about. The difference between what Edison was working on and what Tesla was working on, and guys like, who was it? One of you guys know, the guy that helped help get the AC on the current, to take the credit for it. Westinghouse, there we go. had a brain, my brain broke down. Anyway, Westinghouse helped push Tesla's AC current through because it was a better form of electricity. You could get the energy transmitted further for less cost and so on down the line. But either way, before AC current actually came online as the normal voltage that everybody uses in all their households, they were running Edison's DC. Edison had DC power plants. And so all the systems were set up to use DC current, like old elevators would have high voltage DC motors that would bring the elevator up and down. Well, when the switch went from AC to DC, DC to AC, then they had to figure out a way by which to still be able to use these existing appliances and have them function right. So that's where the mercury arc rectifier came into being. It essentially was a vacuum tube with anodes and cathodes on it. Had a little pool of mercury at the bottom of it, and when you put the high voltage AC to the cathode or to the mercury, it would heat up the mercury to the point where it vaporized the mercury, and then the high voltage keeps coming in would eventually turn the gas of mercury into plasma. This had capabilities of creating a lot of electrical pressure with inside this vacuum tube that would only allow the electrons to go only one direction, and thus forth you could have a DC current, high voltage DC, to run the old elevators. So that concept, along with Tesla's concepts together, is what most of my research is based on, plasma technology. And the fact that you can actually tune that plasma up and down just as if you would a potentiometer or a variable capacitor. And using a vacuum spark gap, you can literally change frequencies of the energy that's coming out. Everything that is electrical signals or electricity has a wave. And if you're not familiar with how they check these kind of things, you look up oscilloscopes, and it'll show different waveforms on there. And you can adjust and measure and all that kind of stuff, your projects using an oscilloscope to see what kind of frequency waves are coming up out of there. So with that said, that's why I believe that plasma is going to be the one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle as far as going into the modern age of electricity, changing the way by which we actually use electricity. Electricity that we've got these days is basically built on an inefficient system and needs to be upgraded as far as I'm concerned. What are your guys' thoughts on the matter? Anybody?
What's the minimum voltage in which the vacuum rectifier will operate?
Well, it kind of depends on how you got this thing set up, because you can actually get plasma at a very small high voltage. I mean, when I say small high voltage, I mean you're not up into thousands of volts, you know. If you've ever seen my videos, you'll see that I've got what are fluorescent bulb starters, and you can see a wireless transmission, and it's actually energized the argon to the plasma state. You can actually see the plasma as I'm holding this bulb in my hand. And so the energy that's coming off there, because I'm hanging, it's hanging off of a aluminum pyramid antenna that's hanging from a piece of hemp rope, and so the only grounding to the entire system would be whenever I actually put my fingers on the outer glass and you can actually see that plasma. And there are, if you've ever looked out there on plasma globes, you'll see that there's some little 5-volt USB plasma globes out there that you can plug into your computer, and you're actually getting the plasma state in that deal. So it could actually be done with a whole lot less voltage than you would initially believe. It's like the fluorescent bulb. You know, there's a gas inside there, and when you're hitting it with a high voltage or high frequencies or whatever, you get a plasma buildup inside that bulb, which in turn creates light and heat and so on down the line. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No.
Oh, you're just contemplating. I do that once in a while. Yeah, so it's really super simple to create high voltage. It's all in the windings of your coil. I mean, if anybody knows the most about that, talk to Muddy, because he builds the actual flux wind generators, and those are pretty impressive. He even designs his own props. So if you haven't checked out his YouTube channel yet, run over there to Muddy Mudman on YouTube and look at some of his work. The very first work that I've ever seen Muddy do was the very first video that I came across of his was he was working on a tin can Stirling engine. And I was impressed, not necessarily that... about the Stirling engine in itself, but that he was able to meticulously take what otherwise would have been scrap material and put it into a functioning device and make it work. And as I watched him and he explained in detail how to do this, I was really impressed. I subscribed to his channel and been friends with him ever since. And you know, I'll never forget the first phone call we had together, man. We just had so much to talk about, and, you know, we kind of made friends for life, man. What do you think, Muddy?
I appreciate the big compliment there on the coils, but I have to stand aside for Larry Woods. He knows a little bit more about coils than I do. As far as making the axial flux and stuff like that, I wouldn't know, but there's a lot more to know about coils that I still need to learn.
Well, yeah, Larry's got some amazing things going on with the coils that he's working with, and he's got probably a pretty good background in electronics and electrician and stuff like that. And so with that said, he's a bonus to add to the brilliant minds. I call it the dream team. See, we're bringing the dream team together and from all different places of the globe. And we're going to solve the so-called energy crisis of the world. We all of us sitting here, we know there is no energy crisis. I mean, it just depends on the greed and the people that want to make money or whatever off of whatever resources and power plays, all that kind of stuff there. But
it also depends on what you call an energy. I mean, there's enough energy in the vein of a coffee cup to evaporate the whole world's oceans. So, I mean, it's getting to it, and some people have reached it, and government says, oh, we got to get rid of that guy before other people find out.
Yeah, it's a matter of national security, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, national security, my eye. It's a matter of somebody's wallet. I mean, I don't know how some of these guys sit down, you know, because their wallet's got to be 700 stories tall. I mean, I'd be kind of scared to sit on that wallet.
Yeah, you might fall off.
That's what I'm thinking. But, you know, hey, this is how we with these networks get past all the monkey business, is that we just share these ideas out here. And I'm not opposed to people patenting ideas and making money off of that. It's a wonderful thing. You know, what I like is like the atmospheric group. They patent all their ideas, but they also encourage that people, you know, duplicate and try to debunk it or whatever, so that they can prove their concepts and stuff like that. And then that also leads that into being able to find even more discoveries, like, you know, different energy devices that people open source out there will allow people to run tests on it. In my lab, running tests on it, I might find something that you may have overlooked that makes your invention or whatever better, you know? What do you think?
Larry made a comment down here, and I have to agree with it, although it sounds kind of strange. Going back to D.C. is the best way to go with local power source. But for long distance and stuff, and trying to power towns, you know, like say from Fort Worth way out 40 miles out, or to try, you know, power all that, yeah. But I kind of agree with it, because basically all the 60 hertz and other parts of the world at 50 hertz, it's hurting people.
Well, you know, here's the thing that I kind of agree, but then I kind of slightly disagree because of history. if you're just powering your own home, that would be a good way, like you said. But if you're powering a large deal and you have to put high voltage DC, see, one of the problems that they had back in Edison's time was that, you know, you build up a static charge on your body and get too close to an outlet, you get laid out, man. Lightning bolt jumps out and, you know, lays you out. And so therein lies the difference between AC and DC. You know, AC's both going back and forth, and I've been around many AC sockets, and I've been energized all to you know what, but I never had a lightning bolt jump out of the socket on me. See, if I was running high voltage DC in my deal and, you know, and playing around in my lab, I think I probably would have got laid out a whole lot more than a normal.
Right. My whole shop is DC only because I don't have the grid. Don't want to lose the efficiency of what I have. When I start running the inverters down in my shop, then my batteries drop quicker, and the wind must be blowing and the sun must be shining, but I do a lot of work at night when it's cool.
Well, you should do a video about your lab being completely off the grid, and explain to people, look, you got fans that you can use that run off of DC, you've got little mini fridges that you can use that run off of DC, lighting systems, there's all kinds of LED lighting systems, there's all kinds of halogen or whatever. You know, keep in mind, halogen's going to drain the most of your energy if you do that, but I go out there and I get those really cheap trailer light bulbs, because they don't drain a whole lot. And then you can also go to RV shops and you can get these light bulbs that look exactly like a regular incandescent light bulb that screws into a socket, and you can plug them up there and they look and light the same exact way. They come anywhere from 25 to 50 watts. And
right.
So, you know, with that said,
we got those 3-watt LEDs. I mean, they put out, they're $11 at Home Depot. 3-watt LEDs. I think they got three big LEDs in them suckers.
But even at that, the price wise, comparison wise, price wise, that those are pay for themselves in the long run, because they'll last pretty long.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you hook them up backwards, they aren't like regular LEDs where they blow.
Yeah.
Because these things are set with their own a dial bridge rectifier in them.
Cool.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You hook them up backwards, forwards, they do the same exact thing. And if your power gets low, you know, down to 2/3 or so, those things are still shining pretty bright.
Well, so, you know, DC current is going to probably be your best friend in worst case scenario, such as an apocalyptic scene where the power grid goes down and you ain't got no power. DC is going to be your best friend because it's going to be the easiest for you to use as far as lighting and all that kind of stuff. Now, can't also underestimate AC because you can still light up old dead fluorescent bulbs with some high voltage. But either way, you know, there's certain things that you might not be able to run because you're not pushing enough, you know, current through the systems as they stand. But there are other methods by which you can do certain things, you know. We talked about, for air conditioning, like the evaporative cooling, and then all you need is something as simple as a little 12-volt fan to blow across that thing. And, you know, depending on how powerful you want that fan will depend on how much of that battery bank that you're going to drain up. What do you think?
I think that's pretty cool. Oh, another cool development. Too bad I tried to catch a hold of him before the show, but Ryan Abrams, I tried to catch a hold of him and see if he wanted to be on. I got no answer. Seems he's been a little scarce here lately trying to take care of a lot of things. But he got sent to him a few DC motors for air conditioners, good size ones. And I said, well, what's the RPM and voltage on that? And we figured it all out, and I figured a 6-foot 2-inch prop like I just put on the Muddy's Mighty Mini Wind Turbine would be perfect for it. So that makes two I got to carve for other people. But I told him, I said, man, I'll carve you one of those and send it up there. And he seemed very happy. He said he was going to send me down one of those mini Tesla coils. But, you know, with me, I'm saying, well, cool, yeah, I'll just put a fluorescent tube on the top of those because these 12-volt fluorescent lights, which are pretty darn efficient, man, they're hard to find, and you got to get them at RV places. They want over $100 for these 35-watt ones. I said, my goodness. You know, that's like something you put above your mirror in the bathroom, you know?
Those are pretty cool, and I seen Dieden, I think he had one of those too, and he did a video here recently about that. I was pretty impressed that he didn't really have to put a whole lot of, you know, spin on that thing to get it to actually light up the little light bar that he was using.
There's
a comment in the Awake chat room. Clear Angel was asking which coils can one use to help the growth of plants. I'm not really sure because I've never really did no research. Does anybody else have any ideas or haven't done any research on that?
Well, they got.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Larry.
There are certain frequencies, magnetic. Let me start again. There are certain coils that put out a magnetic field. That increases the plant growth. Normal magnetic fields will increase plant growth. The amount of field that you get out is what dictates the area of coverage that you'll get. So almost any coil will do it. If you know how to make a coil, a flat pancake bifilar coil with one end of it, leaving that copper, putting that end into the ground, and attaching a nail, anything steel or iron to the other end, or aluminum to the other end, and put that also in the ground, that coil will stimulate plant growth.
When you say bifilar, for those that don't understand what that means, you got a real simple way to explain to the average Joe. I mean, I understand what it means, but that's a pretty high-tech terminology for, you know.
Bifilar coil is simply dual element. What it means is take a long piece of wire, fold it in half, and wrap that into a flat spiral.
Yeah, that's pretty easy to explain. So essentially, he's taken one length of wire, he's folded it in half, and coiling it around like a pancake on there, and then you've created a coil. One he's talking about tapping into the earth there. You can use the energy from the earth itself.
Exactly. Yeah. And that energy is enough to energize that coil and create enough of a magnetic field to increase your plant growth.
Will high frequency AC work?
Would what, sir?
He's saying high frequency AC, like as a transformer.
Yeah. The magnetic field put out by any transformer would do it.
So put your plant next to your phone charger.
Yeah. Have you noticed how the weeds around your workshop grow faster than anywhere else?
Oh, yeah, it's like a jungle out there.
That's because of the magnetic field you're putting out.
Well, sometimes they're really happy. They're like they're on caffeine, because whenever I fire up these coils, man, I light up the town.
Yep.
I must be doing something wrong, because I killed most of them.
Oh, man, what'd you do?
Well, hit by a Tesla coil.
See, I think that Mitko doesn't have a green thumb.
Yeah.
These bipillar coils, you know, you said fold the wire in half and then roll it. To my knowledge, you'd have to, that folded end that you start in the middle, you'd have to clip it and take the start of one of those coils and put them to the finish of the other coil. Therefore, when it goes around, it gets a higher capacitance. And that way it becomes more efficient, am I correct?
Yeah, if you'll do that same thing with two wires at the same time in one coil, that'll achieve the same effect.
Yeah.
Now I got it.
So there could also be a simpler deal to it, maybe not as strong as a field, but a pancake coil used in copper tubing might suffice. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. A pancake coil with copper tubing and run a magnetic ferrofluid through it.
Yeah.
That would generate a pile of electricity. And you could do that with a circulating pump from an aquarium.
And there are videos out there on YouTube that will explain magnetic ferrofluids. And so you could look that up there on YouTube. And anybody's got any links for magnetic ferrofluid, throw them in the chat room for everybody.
I'll put a couple in for how to make ferrous oxide 1 and or 2 and 3.
What, you were saying with that little fish pump, you talking about a little air pump, you can pump ferrofluid with it?
Yeah, the circulating pump on an aquarium filter.
Ah, okay, now I got you. I was thinking about the air bubbler.
That'd clog up. But the circulating pump on an aquarium filter would do a nice job for that.
My brain part.
So anyway, does anybody have any new projects that they're working on that they want to talk about?
I was thinking about something that Larry was telling me. He gave me permission. It's another kind of earth battery. And I'll see if I can explain it right. And if I goof up, Larry's right here to correct me, and then I'll be justified. Anyway, excuse me, just a second. Okay, you take 4 10-foot poles, 2 of copper and 2 of steel. You put one in the ground, which you're going to call north. And you mark off 4 positions, north, south, east, and west. But the distance between these, from north to east and north to west and, you know, east and west to south, is 10 foot apart. You're going to drive these into the dirt, about 7 foot in, and leaving 3 foot up. And then you take a wire, copper wire, and you ground it to one of the copper poles and leave the wire, you know, leave a little excess coming out. Then you go around the other 4 poles and come back to the original one. And the second one is not soldered or grounded to the rod. Then you do that on all the other 3 as well. and you go around nine, you do this nine times, and then you take some of those and you wind up rerouting them in parallel or in series for what voltage you want, how many amps you want, and it's supposed to put out some really decent current to run a few things. I mean, that's a given, that's a lot of wire. You know, you're going to 40, probably about 40 and a half feet per deal, so you're looking 9 times 40 and a half feet of wire.
I'd like to see some research videos.
That's
on that.
That's like 360 feet of wire there.
Because I do know, I do know that I've had this earth battery that I've had plugged into the dirt for at least a year now, and it's still maintaining 0.56 volts. Now, that don't sound like a whole lot, but with the proper circuit, you could make a dump circuit to domino into a bigger tank circuit, which you could use to get real-time power out of. So it's not beyond the realms of possibilities in a larger system like that. I can see it working.
Yeah. Oh, the only other thing, the north and south rods that go down into the ground are copper. East and west are steel. So,
well, there's definitely there's multiple things that could be going on in the same deal. See, I use a galvanized ground rod and a copper coated ground rod, so I get some galvanic action, some electricity going through via the galvanized portion, and some of it chemical because of the chemistry in the dirt. You can see this because when it rains, the voltage will go up once the ground becomes saturated and the chemistry is kind of mixed up. So it's almost like a natural self-charging battery, because when it rains, you know, whatever chemistry is in the rain and whatever chemistry is in the dirt is going to make a chemical reaction between those two dissimilar metals.
And don't forget the telluric currents as well.
Yeah.
And magnetic resonance.
Well, and then also there's also radio frequencies that you could be picking up on there as well that normally would only measure in the millivolt range. But I did a video out there called Simple Circuit that you can coil one little coil of wire with a germanium diode and a capacitor, and you can sit there and watch this capacitor charge up just by walking around in your yard. Have you seen that video?
No, I haven't had much time for videos here lately, but I believe you.
Well, you've been a long-term subscriber.
That's the old ones you were talking
about. Yeah, that's way back. I've got over...
I saw those. Now I remember.
I've got over 100 and some odd videos, quite a few videos up there. So, there's enough to keep people busy. I've got... few crazy videos, and I got a lot. There's information in all of them, but either way. Now, the how to properly panic during global warming, that's a good informational video.
Yeah, that was good. My goodness, I don't think I'd have had the guts to lay down in the snow.
Have you seen that one, Larry?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Dark room. I think my favorite was when you turned a regular old black and white television set into an oscilloscope. I mean, it didn't have the timing and the latch, you know, to lock the wave in. But hey, all you gotta do is alter your frequency just a little bit, and you get to at least see the wave. And that's not bad for next to free. I mean, you gotta spend what, $5, maybe $12 for switches and a little bit of wire.
Well, I had all the switches. I had bought a whole entire bag of switches, and I still got a bunch of them left. I bought them for a couple bucks, and so. Looking at the thrift stores and stuff like that, and old like scratch and dent or surplus sales, you find all kinds of stuff, man. But yeah, that
my parts. I tell you what I used to do. I used to take the circuit boards, and if I needed the parts off the circuit boards, and I just turned the flame up on the stove. I got a pair of channel locks, and I grabbed the edge of that board. And I move that thing over there and count to six. That's all it takes to melt the solder real good and not hurt the part. And turn it upside down, smack it on the edge of the sink, let all that stuff go down into the water. It's fine, cools it off quick. You know, I'm telling you, 98% of those parts kick as far as the semiconductors. And, you know, the resistors and capacitors, shoot, those are great. So,
Yeah, I remember your desoldering deal. But anyway, yeah, back to that.
You can desolder 90% of the board in, what, 8 seconds? That's great.
Back to that oscilloscope, you know, it's like, you know, analog TVs. What do you do with them? They're laying everywhere. People give them away. You can go to a garage sale and buy one for 50 cents because people just want you to carry it away instead of them putting it on the curb. But, yeah, it was an easy process to turn that into a little, you know, cheap version of an oscilloscope, but you can actually see the waveforms via the, you know, I had mine plugged into the stereo, I think, in that video. But, yeah, there's alternative uses to a lot of the appliances that people throw away. You look at my video, the redneck hot tub, I use the coffee pot element for the heating element of the hot tub, and it works out fine.
And caught the attention of a regular TV station.
Oh, yeah. If you leave that thing on too long, that doggone water will get so hot you can't even sit in it.
Wow. Yeah, the cool thing about that you know, almost free oscilloscope was I had a, you know, I saw these people getting rid of a one of them projector screen TVs. You know,
yeah.
And it's got three colors. That's okay. I work with three bays. You know, one color for each. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You just turn it and crank it to the right speed, and hey, you get to look and see what it does. If one of the waves is suffering, you'll know it right away, and you'll know which one.
Well,
I think it's great.
At least 90% of my lab is all recycled stuff that was either donated to me or that I dug out of the trash, you know, that somebody was going to throw away anyway. And so with that said, I wanted to do it on the cheap so that the average Joe, anything that I built, they could duplicate. You know, it's kind of like that Junkyard Wars show. Have you guys seen that show?
The Ultimate in Free Cycling.
Yeah. You go through the junkyard and you find alternative ways to build stuff. Now keep in mind, it's probably not going to be as good as the high-tech version you might be able to get out of the stores or the, you know, whatever, but it's still, the concepts work even with junk. And that's the pop boat, you know. If I can ever get that doggone coil manufactured, then I'm gonna make a full size pop boat. I've got the design already. It's just a matter of funding, you know. One coil through the country, a company that I had got a price quote on, it was $1,500 for one, or $8,500 for 10 of them. And, you know, that's pretty steep. So, with that said, I'm kind of, you know, waiting, biding my time to either try to get a way to do it, to build one of them coils, you know, myself, or maybe I got a friend that's got the resources to do it or whatever, but that's what's holding me up on that deal right there. Don't everybody jump to the microphone at once. Wouldn't want you to chip a tooth.
Can you make the coil from brass?
Well, it's possible. I could probably make it from copper tubing, and I can get probably up to 3/4, maybe even an inch of copper tubing. Once again, I'm not exactly sure how that's going to weigh out price-wise. I need to get up to the hardware store and check and see what kind of price tag they got on a roll of copper tubing.
My idea for the pop-pop boat engine for when you get bigger is taking two sheets and melt them together. Yeah, fuse. Fusing them together in lines all up and down, having the curve in between each one of them, and then several tubes coming out, because I think the things still have to be down to a small size, but as a big sheet set across there, I think it'd be great for the heat to go right over, and it doesn't matter if the tubes heat, I really don't care, so because that's just going to add to it a little bit. But I think they'll try to, if they're all the same size, they'll try to resonate with each other, and heck, it might sound like a 20-cylinder, you know. I think it'd be really great.
Well, you build your version, and I'll build my version, and we'll have a drag race, man.
Whatever father time allows me.
Yeah, that's That's the whole thing. There's a whole lot of projects out there. People need to jump on the bandwagon and start building these projects and videotaping them, throwing them up there on YouTube so we can share them with everybody.
Yeah, I figure if one's good enough to push that Coke can through the water or something about the size of an overextended milk carton and it does pretty good, then I figure, well, shoot, a whole bunch of them ought to be able to power something about the size of a surfboard anyway.
Well, you saw that video that I did. Now, granted, that thing wasn't moving very fast, but it was moving under its own power, and it only had two turns on the coil. It wasn't nowhere near enough turns on that coil to build up enough pressure to make it move any faster. However, I also only had a small container, so it didn't have time to build up to speed either. So what I needed to do was to put that thing in a larger pond, but I done gave it away to somebody. I don't remember who it was. But I told him they could have it. And
I got lucky. I helped the guy clean up his yard and all that stuff. Like 7 years worth of putting the trash just outside the door. Bags ripping open, wind blowing, weeds growing up. It took about a week. He said, "You see anything you want to take home? Take it." So, sure, I saw this, not one of them newer pools, you know, where the sun hits it and within a year it all falls apart through cracks and gets holes. No, this is one of those that they're like a quarter inch thick. And I said, "Ooh, yeah." And it's still tough. I just strapped it on top of my pickup, on top of my Isuzu Trooper, and took it home. And it was wider than the vehicle and longer than the top. So, that's going to make a nice pop run around. So.
Well, the boat that I've got in mind is my father-in-law. Back in the day, him and his son, they were into welding, and they took a couple old hoods off, I think they were like a 32 Buick or something like that, you know, the old ones that are kind of pointy at the nose, and they put them back to back and welded these things up and made essentially like a canoe out of these two old hoods. And so what I want to do is take those coils that I designed and put them on that boat and make that boat actually move.
You know, as an idea, if the coil that you get, doesn't quite do what you want it to, try several tubes of a thinner.
Well, I thought about that as well, would be to take a bunch of like quarter inch copper tubing and put it inside some larger tubing and then bend that all in one shot, you know, so that you would have multiple pockets in there.
And then run your flame right through it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, you know, it's just a matter of trial and error kind of stuff, but I'm a firm believer that if you can make it on a small scale, you can scale it up or scale it down, whichever direction you need to go.
There's got to be a way.
Yeah. And so, you know, with that said, I'm going to get that going as soon as I possibly can. I'm kind of anxious about that one there because, you know, it's just the first full-size, man-sized pop-pop boat's going to be a hit out there in the alternative energy world.
Hey, Larry, you ever play with pop-pop boats?
No, never at all. Even know how to make one.
Well, essentially, there was a little toy that dates way back to, I think, in the 20s somewhere, 1920s. But it was a little boat, and it had a little bitty diaphragm engine in it that was essentially a steam engine. And all you did was put a little candle underneath this little deal. You get primed with water, and then put a little candle under this deal, and it would boil that water to steam. And when the steam pressure forced its way out, whichever pipe it went out, on the opposite side, it would also create a vacuum, which would suck the water back in and propel the boat forward. And it made this little popping noise as it went, as the it's kind of like a water hammer in your steam pipes. Every time steam popped, it would make that noise in it, so you could hear this little boat putting around the pool that you get it floating in. It was a really neat little toy, but it sparked off some brilliant ideas into a contest. And I was surprised when not one single person, you know, entered a boat in that contest, because we had some amazing prizes for that deal, man.
It kind of, Larry, it kind of sounds like the great uncle after the bean or chili eating contest. And they can just magically go through the water off a candle, and it, Scaled up, it'd probably be doing about 8 to 10 mile an hour, so it's really not too bad, you know. Double walking speed, as far as if somebody was in that boat, how fast they'd walk would be 5 miles an hour, so double walking speed. So they're pretty cool.
That's amazing, and I'm still in a boat that is not extremely hot.
Well, see, the best thing about that whole design is that you would essentially have a solid-state boat motor that used absolutely no moving parts, just heat. And as far as fuel, you'd be bringing your fuel with you because you're just pumping the water up through the deal. You know, you put a log up inside the little mini boiler system, and you know, you could regulate it with steam pressure valves or whatever to... You know, it's not like you're going to be going so fast that you're going to kill yourself or anything. Not like a jet ski or anything, but, you know.
Or just use a Fresnel lens and focus the sun on it.
Yeah, that was a possibility as well.
The reason why I brought it up to you, Larry, is the main deal is if you can make those, magnet-driven generator run a filament that runs through the middle of that coil, rather than the diaphragm with the coil one, I'm sure that would kick.
Yeah, kick it into a coffee pot element. You know, if you've ever studied the inside of a coffee pot, it has a element that has a tube that goes through there, and then on one side it will have this check valve that will only allow the pressure to go one way. And so it has a stopper that will stop the steam from water from escaping until it builds up water pressure or steam pressure and forces that little springy valve to open up and allow the coffee to percolate through your coffee pot.
So Cultus put a wire through the middle of that, what was it, a 2-inch coil of like 5 wraps?
No, he just used the coil itself and direct shorted it onto the battery.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah, and
well,
you saw
your power source.
Yeah,
it's the hot water in your house is like that. All they do is energize a coil underwater.
Yep.
An uninsulated coil.
Yeah, but he energized the tube itself.
Yeah, and he spit the water out pretty far out of that deal. It was pretty impressive how much pressure he got just for the instantaneous touch that he put on there.
Hey.
That thing almost got him in the face.
But these are simple examples out there of things that you can, if you study them now, if we ever did have a problem such as the power grid going down, you wouldn't be left without, because, you know, it's basic science. You know, even back, if you go all the way back to the days when they had nothing but wagons and horses to travel on, those folks back there learned some basic science that did all kinds of cool stuff. Look at the Amish communities. I'm amazed. I would love to go spend a couple weeks with an Amish community just to watch how they do things like refrigeration and farming and ways that they know how to use leverage to lift heavy things or whatever without, you know, modern-day machinery. These folks have been around for a long time, and they get along just fine with, you know, using the simple of things. And so, those, if you ever want to learn about survival, go over and visit with the Amish community and ask them how they do things. Their refrigerators, they've got blocks of ice in their refrigerators that may have been there for several generations, you know, because what they do is during the wintertime, They will go out and cut ice from a pond or, you know, put water outside, fresh water, and freeze it up. And then they will make these blocks and put them inside these highly insulated boxes that they make refrigerators out of and are able to store their food all year round without ever having to worry about using electricity. That's a pretty amazing feat. What do you guys think?
I think they cut them from the mountain and bring them down. You say that ice lasts, you know, generations. I don't know about that, but they might have been using them for generations, but not the same piece of ice.
No, they literally, you would be surprised if you've seen inside of one of these refrigerators how cold they really are inside there. And if you got an ice block way to the back of this deal, and it's not getting any kind of heat, not even the opportunity to melt, it's there for a long time.
So what, do they open up on top so the air doesn't exchange? when you open them?
Well, they got like kind of a walkway to come into there, so you know it's kind of like you know decontamination deal is the easiest way I can explain it. You know, when you walk in, you shut the first door, and then you open the next door, and that way you ain't letting the heat out or in.
Oh, it's a walk-in freezer.
Yeah. These things are like the size of root cellars, man. And they're so well insulated. You know, a cave will stay 60 degrees all year round. You know,
right.
Because it's not getting... If you got to open any opening in the cave, that's the only reason why it's at 60 degrees. But it's underground. It's not getting no sunlight. There's no heat being trapped in there or anything. And so, you know, it's pretty amazing. You know, they use, there's a castle over here not too far from where I'm at where they use a cave to literally cool the entire castle. The castle sits on top of the cave, and every time the wind blows through that cave, it forces the cool air up out of that cave up through ductwork inside the castle and all the way up to the top, and then you know that cool air falls. And so as that cool air's falling that back down through the castle, it's cooling that place down. And I walked in there in the middle of July when it was hot enough outside that you were breaking into a sweat just standing around. And it was like they had the central air unit going. It was it was impressive.
That's awesome. Have you ever heard of papercrete?
Uh-uh.
It's where they take like 60 pounds of newspaper, and they take it. What they do? They take the trailer, a regular, like one of them old pickup trailers, are made out of the back end of a pickup. Okay, you take the yoke, you know where it normally meets the drive shaft, and you re-weld everything so that it's pointing straight up, and it comes through the middle of the bed of the pickup. And it's got a like one of them big water troughs, the round ones, sitting in the back of the pickup truck. And where that yoke comes up through the bottom of the bed, it's got you put a big lawnmower blade on it, and then you take about 9 pounds of not sackcrete, but the can't think of what it is. Just the base powder. Not the sackcrete that's got all the stuff mixed.
Yeah, just
in.
The dust.
Yeah, just the dust. And anyway, they mix that up in there, and then they go take it and they drive it around the block for about after they add the water, and they drive it around the block about 2, 3 to maybe 5 miles an hour. And it cuts all that stuff, makes it up into a nice mush, whips it up, and then you got two boards sitting on. You got plywood laid out across the ground, probably like 50 foot, and you got two boards spaced out, probably about 9 inches or so. And you drive over the top of this, and they open this little chute, and they just fill it up nice and even all the way across, and they put other boards down in between it to separate the bricks.
Wow.
They let it sit for like about 5 hours. Then they take the wood off the side, and they let it sit out in the sun. The next day, you pick them all up, and you start building with them. And these things are amazingly thermal. After you build with them, the outside, the sun will be beating on it. You put your hand inside, and the inside doesn't feel any heat at all. It's just cool.
Well, see, that's
nice and cool, like you're sitting in the shade. And they're very light because of all the paper and air.
See, there's another way, simple recycling kind of deal going on there. But have you seen those houses that they make out of hay bales?
Portland is the name that I was thinking of. Portland cement.
Cool.
The hay houses. Yeah.
Yeah, they will take those hay bales and stack them up and build the body of the house, and then they will take like chicken wire or something like that, and then they will stucco with concrete. So that system that you're talking about combined with those, that would make a pretty doggone efficient house as far as insulation factor. And my biggest concern whenever I first started to hear them about building hay bales for houses that hay bales, if they get wet, can spontaneously combust. But the way that these are set up, they'll stay dry because of the the concrete around them.
Yeah,
It's pretty.
Yeah, then you got Cobb. Cobb, I mean, you use very, very little bit of Portland. It's a lot of you using clay and your straw and clay, straw, and just a little bit of Portland. And that stuff builds real nice.
Yeah, and I've also, have you seen the earth homes that they've been making out of tires?
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive awesome. Because, you know, when we got so many tires here, especially in the United States, that people can't find ways to get rid of them. Now, some of the cities are grinding them up and putting them in the asphalt that they mix to make the streets and stuff like that. But there's still a whole bunch of these tires out there. You know, I've seen yards that were completely compacted full of stacks and stacks of tires. But what they do is they take these tires and they fill them up with dirt and compact the dirt inside there so the tire is completely full of dirt, and then stack each of the tires up, all, you know, just like building a wall. And then they'll put dirt on the outside and pack it up and clay and stuff like that. And by the time it's all said and done, you know, it looks like a stone house, you know.
And plant grass to keep it together.
Yeah. Use grass for your roof.
I got them on my house today. Yeah.
So those are just a few basic examples of things that you can recycle to do stuff with. And that's what I love most about these shows like the Mad Science and the Knights of the Round Table is the ingenuity, you know. And we should get down to some of these third world countries and help these folks use some of the resources they've got, you know. I've seen some pretty ingenious inventions come out of third world countries, because necessity is the mother of invention. And when you ain't got, you figure out a way to get, right?
There's another way that they're doing. These things look like beehives. They take these long tubes of fabric that are about 2 foot in diameter, and they just fill it up with dirt or sand or whatever. And then and they just, as they're filling it up, they're rolling it, they're taking it all the way around. They put forms in the middle to make it go, you know, make it go over and over the forms. Then they can take it out and put regular windows in and all that other kind of stuff, and air vent tubes, lay the electrical down right down in the middle of it. I mean, the place is not going to burn. And they keep on going around in a spiral until they get to the top, and it looks like, you know, the proverbial beehive. And then off to the sides of those are a couple more smaller rooms, like that tube that comes out the side of an igloo, that's part of it. All those things are pretty neat. I said, yeah, man, all you need is a bunch of dirt and some tubing, you know. And they run some rebar down in it. And I think some of them actually put a little bit of Portland in it and clay and stuff to harden that stuff up, but that seemed like a real easy way to build, because you just lay it right where you want it, and it stays together. The tube is actually the form. They pound and pound and pound, you know, or tamp with a big flat tamper to get it all flat for the next layer, and they go all the way around. It takes a bunch of people a few days and knock one out, and those things, they're like caves. They stay kind of cool.
Well, you know, like I said, you know, if you want to get completely off the grid, you know, and doing things like building houses like that, that's a good start, because insulation factor is going to be one of the biggest keys as far as how much energy it takes to heat your house. And why they still build houses that are so inefficient, you know, essentially most of the individuals out there in this world are living in cracker boxes.
I believe in burning my wood for heat. I'm sorry with that. And I've also got a 12-foot by 4-foot solar hot water heater up here on, that I'm fixing to put up on the roof. Hell, you remember Boomer? Boomer went down to Mexico because he married a beautiful Mexican wife. He went down there to Mexico to visit the parents. And while he was down there, he found out they didn't have any hot water.
Hey, Ryan is in the chat room if somebody wants to add him to this call. If he wants to come on.
I can. Let me add him too here.
Anyway,
he went down to the store and he bought... you talking Brian, or are you talking Ryan Abrams?
Yeah.
Okay. Down here. He You went down to the store and bought a whole bunch of this black plastic tubing. And this black plastic tubing is right at about 1.5 to 2 inches ID. I think he went and got about 200 foot of it. And he spiraled it all out there on the lawn. And when Daddy came home, Mama was all pleased. Daddy, dropped him back. Daddy basically never stayed in the shower more than 5 minutes, but that day he was in there for over a half hour, and you could hear him sing, and Mama was going, "That's my son-in-law. That's my son-in-law, the magician." So, he never ran out of hot water for that whole half hour. I think that's great.
Yep, there's a lot of energy solutions out there, and I keep on saying it, and I'm going to keep on saying it. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. Because, like I said, you never got a bill from the sun or the wind or the dirt or the river or creek or even the ocean. There's some really nifty generators that set out there, and the waves from the ocean hit a paddle back and forth and generate electricity, you know. And so necessity being the mother of invention, if you're tired of being on the power grid, take it off one room at a time, man. You know, start with your lighting and work your way up to the bigger stuff. And, you know, it's just as simple as that. You know, and maybe financially you can't do it all at once. And so that's why I say start off with a small. I did a video called Simple Solar that will show you, you know, different things that you can get to, you know, like little fans, solar fans that stick up on your windows and stuff like that. Don't sound like much, but you know, if you keep the air circulating in there, it's not near as hot as it would be without, you know, with just dead air. You know what I'm saying?
I think the easiest thing I did was taking the ceiling fan, the Harbor Breeze ceiling fan. It looks like we lost Abrams. Anyway, I took the ceiling fan and I took the induction ring off the outside. And for every coil, I put magnets in to take care of each coil on the outside. And it's a two-phase unit, so you take your diode bridge rectifiers for each set of coils. So you got two sets of coils that go all the way around, and they're out of phase by 90 degrees each. But that's okay. When you put them through the diode bridge rectifier, it's DC, but. These coils, also, rather than charging batteries up to 24 or 36 volts, any one you want because they're so thin, we figured that the LEDs are low current. They're mainly a voltage device, and they're nonlinear. So you're not going to have a problem starting up and having the blades stall out.
Yeah.
So you take the start of one set of coils and put it to the finish of the other coil, and the last two wires, you just go ahead and plug right up straight to the LED strands. And I ran 12 strands, and I figured by the wattage that it would be able to knock out 36 strands. And I did this, and it's about a 15 mile an hour wind. Anywhere, I'd say right down around 8, 9 mile an hour wind, I was getting decent light out of them. But up to about a 15 mile an hour wind, man, them things got bright. I could go outside and look for a screwdriver in the grass, no problem. Because these things were all around my house and in my house. After about 6 months of it, my wife got a little tired. She says, "You know, every time the wind picks up, they get brighter, and then they go down. It gets brighter and goes down." I loved it, but my wife got sick of it. She said, "I'm sleeping, and I keep waking up to this light getting like a car is passing me." So, yeah, I had to take it. But, you know, heck, you know, for $40 worth of... For $40 worth of magnets and a little bit of framework, a $2.75 piece of wood that I carved into a prop, and just, you know, the cost of the LED. I mean, there's your generator to kick out enough light, and you know, you don't turn it off. You don't turn the stupid thing off because the wind's blowing. Let it.
Well, what do you think of fiber optics?
I love fiber optics.
Well, one of the things that I like about fiber optics is if you've ever seen any of these little light things down in there, they may have three light bulbs in there that are running multi-strands of light, and the light doesn't dissipate between one strand to the next. And so a person could literally build a system in their house to where you had, like, let's say PVC plumbing, and on each of the ends of the, like, let's say you had a table leg, four legs coming down from your ceiling. And all you need is one light bulb inside this deal to light up, and all the other ones would the light would actually go through the fluid inside those tubes and refract all the way back around to the opposite side. So you can actually, in a sense, bend light using a system like fiber optics, but you could duplicate this using things like either alcohol or mineral oil or water or something like that. What do you think?
Mineral oil seems to be the best if you get the really clear stuff.
But imagine if you only had to run one light bulb to light up your entire house, and instead of a light switch, you only had like a little shutter you could slide over and block out the light.
That's pretty cool. But it has to be a pretty bright light to light all the rooms.
Well, yeah, but it's one. Either way, you're talking one as opposed to, you know, five for five rooms.
Right.
So, you know, a fiber optic system, if you could actually get hold of some of that fiber optic cable, you know, the thick stuff, and be able to use, you know, some really high, really good LEDs, you know, put out a lot of lumens or whatever on one end of that, and run that through your rafters down into your room, you would get lighting from, you know, just the one lighting setup.
Sounds awesome. I'm talking with Abrams here on the side. I'll be back in a minute.
All right. You got any thoughts on all that, Larry?
Another thought on the refrigeration stuff. You can make an evaporation refrigeration out of two clay pots, one that's glazed and one that's not. Bury the big pot in the ground. Put the smaller pot inside of it, the one that's glazed so that it doesn't absorb the moisture, and put sand in between the two pots and put water in that, and just keep it covered, of course, and simply the evaporation off of it keeps food fresh because it cools it down so much.
Cool.
Takes it to 46 or 50 degrees, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, something in that neighborhood. Yeah, it takes it down real good. And, you know, it's not as efficient as it doesn't do as good a job as the refrigerators that we've got now, but it's much more efficient.
Yeah, it beats having your food go bad in one day when you can have it for 3 days. I've seen the big ones outside where they set the clay pot, the porous one, in a pan of water, and they put it in a little like breezeway, so the evaporative coolant does it, and then the other one's sitting inside it.
Yeah, it's amazing, and there are places all over the world that use that. Indonesia, that's a common thing in the villages and up and down.
Do we still have Metco here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do they have any things like that over in Bulgaria that they use?
I wasn't listening for.
Well, heating, cooling, you know, alternative methods like what he was talking about, the two clay pots buried into the ground and that kind of stuff, you know?
No, I mean, before they were using something like this, but now everything is abandoned.
So it's all on the grid now.
What?
It's all on the power grid now.
Yeah, everyone is dependent.
Yeah, that's
like them old refrigerators that were ammonia, and you could plug them in, or you could use propane, and that little flame is just, you know, smaller than what you have on a light that you have on a big lighter to light your cigarette. And that propane bottle lasts for like 2, maybe 3 months, depending on how you got that thing trimmed. But why not use solar?
Yeah, there's a good idea. Larry was talking about Fresnel lenses on a pop-pop boat. Fresnel lens would work good for that.
I need a mini tracking deal and a small Fresnel lens about the size of a 33 LP record album. And that would do it.
Or a solar collector.
Right.
Well, Mitch,
solar furnace. I've got a solar furnace here that I play with all the time. It's great fun.
Mitko threw a key point out there. He's talking about how people were dependent, and that's the truth, man. People are dependent all over the world for the power grid, and if it ever goes down, you know, they're in a mess. And so this information that we're putting out, you know, people should pass this information around to each other for alternative, you know, and like somebody said last time, don't wait until the power grid goes down. Do some research so you're ready, you know. Same thing as stocking up on flashlight batteries in case the lights go out, you know. But what if the lights never come back on? That's the key.
Well, how to make a fire without matches?
Yeah. That's, you know, how many people know how to do that? Go ahead, Mikko.
I just wanted to throw something in. When you build your house, you sign a contract, usually around 15 to 20 years contract. And if you break this contract, you're going to prison.
Wow.
So, yeah, even if you want to go off the system, you can't.
Man, that's messed up.
Yeah.
Well, then my suggestion is don't go completely off the system. Just supplement your power bill by shutting things off.
No wall warts.
Yeah. Get you some little simple solar to run your lighting, you know, or that kind of stuff. Or hook your TV up to a little inverter running off of a battery that you're charging with a hidden solar panel in your window or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Disguise your solar panel out there in your yard by putting it in the bottom of the swimming pool and some heavy-duty Lexan glass so that you can stand on that and not have to worry about cracking the doggone solar panel. I've never tried to stand on a solar panel, but I don't know if they're built to stand on. But if you
they're like glass.
Yeah.
Very fragile.
So I say get you some heavy-duty Lexan that won't be turn yellow by the UV rays and all that kind of stuff, and basically hide it in the bottom of your swimming pool, man. Be out there swimming around charging electricity at the same time.
Yeah, they don't usually make solar panels. Some of them you can walk on, but even though some people put them on your roof, they're kind of slick. You wouldn't want to be walking on them and slide right off your roof. Yeah, they aren't really concerned about the structure of them. But me and Mikko got on Muddy Radio, I think it was last Saturday, I think it was, and we was talking about these solar panels that they're building highways with.
The solar roadways.
Right, the trucks run over them, everything. They got better grip, plus they're heated, plus they got LEDs in them. That they're computer-controlled graphics, so they can just change the road pattern at any time.
Well, you know, you hit on something else.
Warnings out there.
You hit on something else there too. LEDs. You know, you can test this out. Get you a capacitor and an LED, and hook it up and hold it out in the sunlight. You'll charge that capacitor with an LED. You can actually charge a cell phone
right.
with just one single LED. Now, if you could design a circuit that you could actually use multiple LEDs in series or parallel with each other, you could get quite a bit of voltage, and you could hide LEDs all over your property, and, you know, when the sun's out, nobody'd even see it. You know, it's all up in a flower pot or something like that. I'm trying to help Mikko out here, because if he goes off the grid, we don't want him going to jail or anything, but we want him to be able to hide his free energy, you know what I mean?
That's right.
Yeah.
Now these strands of LEDs, the only problem with those is they're designed to work on AC. One part of your wave going up, you know, it turns on half of the LEDs. And when the wave goes down below zero to the negative, it runs the other half of the LEDs. So rewiring a strand of LEDs, just, you know, you got three wires. Well, you say, oh, okay. Just rewire them. Put them up there. You'll get your voltage. And that's a lot of absorption. Probably about the strands of LEDs at full deal there, I think anywhere from 4 to 7 watts, you're going to get at least half of that. That's more than enough to charge your cell phone, for sure.
Well, there you go. There's even more solutions. So, where do we go to from here? Don't everybody jump at the white mic at once. Y'all leave me hanging a lot. We get dead air.
I usually figure I talk too much.
Well, sometimes you don't talk enough. No, there's other solutions out there, and even saving fuel-wise. You had a method by which you put a solar panel on top of your truck to keep your alternator from kicking on. And so when your alternator ain't kicking on, it's not using near as much gas because your solar panel is supplementing the energy for your battery and keeping everything going. Am I wrong?
No, that's right. 100%. That's not a perpetual pulley on the front of your truck, you know. it sucks. If you take an electric motor and you spin it up really fast and short it out, it acts like somebody put the brakes on it. Especially if it's a very efficient one. I mean, it will slam to a halt. Usually you can break the harness that it's holding it, if it's not a very secure one. The thing is, when you start using power in your car, that alternator is only 5% efficient. That's not good. That means if you're going for 746 watts, for 1 horsepower worth of electricity to resupply the battery with all that use that it took, sucking all that energy out of your battery to crank your engine, it's going to take you 45 minutes with that alternator riding around to get you back up to where you started off at. And most cars never keep a full charge on their battery because of that, and wonder why their batteries go bad. The cool thing is, if you get a charge controller and the solar panel, somewhere around 45, maybe 50 watts. Not that big. One of them smaller pickups, a white one, and I put one up on the roof. I had room all the way around it, on top of that small cap. I had room all the way around it. I still ran 2 wires down to the charge controller and then to the battery. And that thing, I mean, I got it real cheap, like $75. And it didn't run all that great. But you know what? I got great gas mileage. And the reason was, is I wasn't sitting there taking 1/3 of my horsepower to run the stupid alternator. If I want 1 horsepower worth of energy at 5% efficiency, it takes 20 horsepower to get that 1 horsepower worth of electricity. So... That's the thing. Now, the only time anything changes is at night when you're running your lights and there's no solar out.
So
then your gas mileage goes down and your power goes down. You notice you'll have to shift going up that hill, where in the daytime, you don't even have to shift.
So essentially...
You realize when you put strain on your engine, your foot actually has to go down on the gas pedal a little farther. And you're doing that for a long distance? No, not good.
So essentially, there's no major modifications to the electrical system. All you got to do is run down your charge controller down and plug it directly into the battery, right?
Exactly. Battery to the charge controller, and from the other side of the charge controller, hook up your solar panel. That's it. I've seen people, I don't want to take my alternator out. Well, I don't want you to either. Leave it there. You're going to need it. There's days where it's cloudy and you got to run your headlights and you're using more than what that solar panel's kicking. I mean, a headlight is 45 watts. 45 to 55 watts per beam. And you got 2 of them. Some people got 4 of them. Plus, they're going to run their AC and all that stuff. Look, you sit there and just put that solar panel on it. That battery's charged up. It's going to be a while before the alternator even wants to kick in because that battery's at full charge. Number 2, it doesn't take as much energy to start your car when you got a full charge. Instead of going, and it starts, you turn that key and it goes, You didn't use that power for very long at all. So you didn't even touch the battery. You're going to go down the road for a while before it even needs a charge. That saves you gas there. Two, your engine parts, seeing as they're not having to push so hard, they're not going to wear out as quick. It makes your engine last a longer time. And if you got one-third more horsepower and one-third more mileage, that's like getting two-thirds more value out of your dollar. For every dollar you spend, you're getting $1.66 worth.
Well, see, there you go. There's a simple solution right out of the gate to start saving you money. Get you a little solar panel, hook it up on top of the roof of your car there. You know, if you got a van, you could probably put a few more solar panels up on the top there. But either way, cutting down on the time that the alternator's kicking on will actually cut down on how much fuel you use. I've been saying this forever and a day, that the way that they designed the alternator, if they modified it just a bit to where the back EMF wasn't coming in there and bogging that generator down, that alternator, then you could save on fuel. But your method is simpler than the one that I was talking about, and there's something you could do right off the store shelf to start saving you some money. Just have that solar panel, make sure it's bolted down, streamlined like Muddy just said, so that it ain't slowing you down and it's not blowing off the top of the car. But, heck, there you go, man.
Well, for those that, here's a few more points to add to it. For those who are kind of, well, nah, I don't know. Here, let me finish convincing you. Your engine's going to last longer. You're going to have more power. You're getting better gas mileage. You know that already. Okay, and you won't have to change your oil as often either. Your engine's going to run right longer, so you're not going to be doing all that terrible shade tree mechanic. And it costs, solar panel costs about as much as one of the cheaper alternators. And the charge control is only like $10. Come on. It's cheap. You're going to make your money back before the month is over.
Yeah, I'm hip to that, man. It's like just what I was saying about taking one room off the power grid per month. Just a little bit by a little bit, throwing you some extra supplemental solar panels up there just to run lighting that you normally would have used off the grid. You'd be surprised how many pennies you'd save in that jar there after every month,
Exactly.
And then you could reinvest. You could reinvest that money.
$5 a day on cigarettes is $150 a month.
So, there's all kinds of methods. Supplementing your water heater, your water heater, believe it or not, it drains off a lot of power from the power grid. If you use that solar water that Muddy's talking about to keep the water temperature up in the water heater, and you could actually use a little solar powered battery bank to run a little circulation pump to keep that water circulating through if need be. Most generally you could probably use the existing plumbing if you did it right to keep the water heated. So with that said, that's usually how the whenever you turn your valve on your hot water deal, it basically forces cool air in and forces the hot water out the pipe. So if you from the cool water side run that through the solar water heater and then back into the hot water tank, that water would would stay warm. And it wouldn't kick on near as much, except for on cold or days that the sun wasn't out. So, with that said, there's a whole lot of different ways that you can, right now, start saving electricity.
Well, you don't even need to have a circulating pump. Number two, the water goes into that comes out of that hose is 160, sometimes 200 degrees. It's enough to burn you.
Yep.
You need to add cold water to it. And if you're using that and it's going through if you take your source, put it in one end of the hose, and the exit going straight into the tank, your water might get warmer as you use it. So therefore, look, to heat something up, air, water, cooking, whatever, to heat or cool, is your major electricity.
Yep.
Knock your electric bill. You know, you got $300 electric bill. Oh, shame on you. Go out there and buy you a black hose. One of them thick, wrapped black hoses, you know, that you can run over with the car. Not the cheapy ones. They'd be doggone, man. Tastes like new plastic playthings, you know, or the smell of a new car when you drink the water.
Huh.
Get that black one. It's that thing is like a half inch, you know, not a half inch, but 3/8 of an inch thick to 1/4 of an inch thick, you know, laced rubber hose, kind of like what you got in a car almost. And, man, they're tough, and they're black, and they get hot. Might cost you $50.
But just think about the savings at the end of that.
You're going to get... It's gonna take a 30 your electric off if you got a bunch of kids taking showers all the time and washing a lot of clothes and all that stuff. That hot water ain't free, man. That cost on your electric bill so much, you're gonna make $50 by the end of the month over what you paid for the hose.
Alrighty, well, guys, we're coming down to the end of the wire. Time flies when you're having fun. So with that said, if anybody wants to give out their YouTube or information real quick or say peace and love and all that, now would be the time to get that doing. After the Mad Science Show, be replaying a pod from the Hope Show from last week. Beverly got some things going on, taking care of some folks out there in the real world. So... you know, we're going to play a pod for her today, and I hope you stay tuned and listen. That was a good message last week. It ought to be a good message this week. So, peace and love, everybody. You guys got anything?
Actually, I have an idea. Can we generate static electricity only with an airflow?
I think there's some possibility in there. You could probably use, you know, whenever they use like Van de Graaff generators, or they charge capacitors up by rubbing a cloth across a vinyl piece of vinyl rod or something like that. So you could probably use a system like that to, you know, blow some air across some strands of cloth that are rubbing back and forth across this deal and having it discharge onto a capacitor. I could see that working.
Because if you can charge the batteries, let's say of a plane, when you're flying it, it would save a lot of money.
Yeah, there's some good possibilities in there. There's actually some the solar panels, they're actually getting some thin, really super thin layers that could actually be built into the body of the wings. And so there's another possibility. But that idea that you're talking about, there's a lot of wind pressure coming off of the, especially if you got a propeller behind that, that you could actually tap into some of that without affecting the efficiency of the plane. That would be worth doing a little bit of investigation, making a little miniature version of, you know, either a Van de Graaff or a Wimshurst style generator, but just being able to blow wind across it.
Yeah, that's all.
Cool. Great stuff, Mitko. Thanks a lot. Anybody else? Muddy?
Oh, okay, I'll go. The added thing that you can do is compost heap. You'll never run out of hot water. You don't even need the hot water heater. Compost on top of that same black hose. You got to have a lot of it, but you know it's going to last for at least 3 months before you got to turn it and re-energize it.
Yeah.
And that's 160 degrees plus, and you will need cold water with it, but they can take showers one after another.
And it's
free.
Everybody has to mow their lawn and rake the leaves. Got to do something with them.
Exactly.
What about you, Larry? Got any last words of wisdom before we fly up out of here with a tune?
Yeah, I'd like to just encourage all you guys, all you inventors out there, to continue the good work and measure the magnetic fields that you're living in and working in. Some of them are harmful. Just
yes,
be cautious. That's
well,
all.
Well, proof of what Larry just said right there, you can try this yourself. When you're down in the city, it seems like anxiety is really high, you know, when you're especially around, you know, a lot of transformers and stuff like that. I've noticed this personally because, you know, for years I've been going out to my father-in-law's house, who lives way, way, way out in the country. He's just like a 2-hour drive from us. And so the further I get away from the city, it seems like the more my spirits are picked up, and I just feel so much better, whether it be from, you know, the bad energy in the city or the pollution or, you know, just the hustle and bustle of all of it. When you get closer out to the country, down to where nature really is, it's, you'd be surprised at how much better you feel. So with that said,
for a few days.
Yeah. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. Take care. If you got any questions or comments or anything like that, you need to get a hold of old Shaziz or Muddy or Mitko or any of us. We're pretty easy to find. So you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. Stay tuned for the Hope Show podcast afterwards. And I hope to see everybody on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Take care.